America. Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the April 7th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's kick off with European club football. It's been a marvelous season for Manchester City, and the team continued its winning ways Tuesday with a 2-1 win against visiting Borussia Dortmund in the first leg of their UEFA Champions League quarterfinal. Phil Foden scored the winning goal in the 90th minute. German teammate Ilkay Gundogan brought down a cross at the far post and laid the ball off for Foden to sweep into the net. Marco Reus had equalized for Dortmund in the 84th minute. Belgian star Kevin De Bruyne was a force in midfield for Man City throughout the match. He scored the opening goal in the 19th minute and also sent in the cross that led to Foden's winner. At the post-match news conference, Man City manager Pep Guardiola had this to say.
As I asked to the players, just win the game. I don't want anything else. We did it, and now we are going to Dortmund to absolutely not defend. We're going to adjust our high pressing. We're going to adjust our build-up. We're going to adjust our control his runners, and they are going to try to play 90 minutes to try to reach semifinals.
With that UEFA Champions League victory Tuesday, Pep Guardiola and Manchester City remain on track for a quadruple of trophies. The team has a big lead in the English Premier League race and is still in contention in the FA Cup and League Cup competitions. In Tuesday's other UEFA Champions League result, host Real Madrid defeated Liverpool 3-1 in the first leg of their quarterfinal. Vinicius Jr. scored a goal in each half, while Egyptian star Mohamed Salah had Liverpool's goal early in the second half. UEFA Champions League quarterfinal action continues later Wednesday evening with two matches. Bayern Munich will play Paris Saint-Germain, and Chelsea is matched against Porto. And VOA's Gwen Uten will have a preview of the Chelsea-Porto quarterfinal later in the show.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
The inaugural season of the Nigeria Beach Soccer League recently kicked off in the country. To find out more, Iron Mike Mbonye spoke with the league's coordinator, Africa Beach Soccer Union President Mahmoud Hadeja.
First of all, I would like to congratulate all Nigerians on the recent development of the Nigeria Beach Soccer League, which is the first of its kind and also the maiden edition. And it's really, really commendable. I think the successes are already coming out from the first round, which was held in Lagos over the Easter weekend. And I think it was a good one. I will also like to use this opportunity to congratulate the Nigeria Football Federation and also commend them for the approval and endorsement of this program. It's a program which has been in the pipeline for quite some time now, and a lot of preparation and the logistics were being involved. But right now, we have the new body, Nigeria Beach Soccer Association, partnering the Nigeria Football Federation to move the league and also the development of beach soccer in Nigeria. So I must say it's a good one and quite commendable.
How many clubs have registered for the beach soccer league?
We're having 8 teams registering, and then they will be playing in 3 other centers, which include Kebbi, Kwara, and then the super finals in Kaduna. That is after Lagos. Because it's the first one, we said we needed to start gradually, and then we expand as we go. But I think the representation from the clubs covers almost all the parts of the country, from the northern part to the southern parts, including southeast and the southwest, which is Lagos. And I think all the teams had a good experience. We had the president of the Nigeria Football Federation, President Amaju Melvin Pinnick, kicking off the league on Saturday, which was the 3rd of April. And many other dignitaries like Barrister Sheyi Akinwumi, who is also the first vice president, and also other beat soccer fans, you know, and stakeholders across the country. So it was a good one, I think. And the teams have already calling, you know, appreciating what has been done, and also the hospitality they got, all those things. So I think it is a step in the right direction. And yeah, the league, it should be an annual program now, just like any other league in Nigeria, because that is the only way to grow. Once we are having the leagues, and it's easier for us to have that, that needed growth and development for the game, because that is what everyone across the world is doing. And I believe very soon we'll be reaping the fruits and seeing the results from this league. Already we're seeing the talents that are coming on board, so we're very, very positive with this program.
We also understand that the African and world bodies of beach soccer league recognize the Nigerian league. Can you tell us something about it?
There's perfect understanding here in Nigeria and also across the African continent. The Africa Beach Soccer Union, which I lead, is a partner in progress for this particular league and all other leagues coming on board in Africa. We've made it a priority for almost all the countries that are interested in doing the beach soccer to set up the league, and then also partner the national associations, that just like what we're doing now with the NFF here in Nigeria. So eventually, that is the way to grow, you know, with the collaborations and the partnership up to the CAF level. We're ready to really work together and see how we can push this game, because, like I said, that is what everyone is doing across the world. And also, I would like to commend the leaders of the Beach Soccer Worldwide, which is the global body. I've been in constant communication with them, and I think almost all the reports from the league have been reported by the global body, and they've given us their 100% assurance that this is the way to go, and then the needed support will continue. And I think it's a commendable thing, and that is what we call on all the African countries to try and do, to partner and collaborate, so that we can have this development in Africa, because it's been long overdue. Beach soccer has been in Africa for a very, very long time, but we've not seen the needed growth. And I think with these collaborations now, I'm very, very confident that this is very, very possible.
Do you have any message for Nigerian fans on the Beach Soccer League?
Well, yeah, for the fans, I think it's a really good thing that now COVID is gradually getting out of the way, and we also have the vaccine now. So it's an opportunity. I think last week we also had the Super Eagles here in Lagos, and also the qualification in Benin. And we also what happened and the fans. So I think it's a big opportunity. I think for the fans, if you've not been to a beach soccer arena, it's an opportunity now to explore, because you get a lot of entertainment and excitement, you know, because beach soccer is a combination of the beach football and entertainment together, because you have all the music and all the side attractions, you know, for the family. So it's a family affair as well.
That's Mahmood Hadeja, the coordinator of the Nigeria Beach Soccer League. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Abuja, Nigeria.
Hi, this is Mahmood Hadeja, president of Africa Beach Soccer Union and also the coordinator of the Nigeria Beach Soccer League. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thanks.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Coming up, our periodic Africa update. We'll talk with two Africa experts about the economic and social impact of the COVID-19 pandemic and find out what factors are driving the insurgency roiling northern Mozambique. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Basketball Africa League President Amadou Gallo Fall has been talking with the Voice of America this week about the tip-off of the BAL's inaugural season next month in Kigali, Rwanda. 12 teams will participate in a two-week tournament at the Kigali Arena from May 16th to May 30th. In an interview with VOA in Johannesburg, Amadou said some top NBA coaches and experts have offered advice ahead of the launch of the new league.
One of the way we really maximize on the time that we were waiting to decide when we're going to restart the season after we postponed in March 2020, we conducted this BAL leadership series from mid-June to really mid-October, twice a month, where we've had some of the best minds in our game come and conduct these exchanges with our BAL teams. We've had the likes of Coach Greg Popovich from the San Antonio Spurs, Dwayne Casey, head coach of the Detroit Pistons, Steve Kerr at the Golden State Warriors, and also general managers and team presidents like Masai Ujiri, Donnie Nelson at the Dallas Mavericks, R.C. Buford. So we brought really a vast cast of experts to come and share their experiences, to talk about their ways, how do they establish the culture in their franchises, and I'll just provide advice in building a winning sport and basketball organization. And in terms of players, we are expecting a good number of players from all around the world, because the way we structure the rosters for our team, out of the 12-man rosters, there will be 8 national players and then 4 imports. Among those 4 imports, 2 will come from other African countries and the 2 others will come from anywhere in the world. And we've been getting a lot of inquiries from players who've played all around the world, from the U.S. or different basketball countries in Europe. A lot of American-based players who've had G League experience who are interested in coming to play in the Basketball Africa League.
Basketball Africa League President Amadou Gallo Fall also has not ruled out seeing a women's BAL in the future.
We are committed to growing the sport, you know, really across gender. And I think if you look at all our initiatives at grassroots level, we have, for example, camps and clinics where we have both boys and girls. So in that vein, we have no limit, no restrictions in terms of how far we can go with also building the women's game. Our partner, FIBA, is also very focused on growing the women's game, and we are right there with them in support. So we have to start someplace, but I have no doubt that, you know, down the line, you know, there will be reason and the impetus to also provide this opportunity for women.
Basketball Africa League President Amadou Gallo Fall says the BAL will be involved in social justice initiatives.
I think this is something that has always been intrinsic in the NBA. Players and coaches and all people involved have always been free to have their opinions and you know, and really participate in the social discourse, you know, to advance communities, to raise issues, to raise awareness. Social responsibility has been at the heart of, you know, really our strategy to, at least in Africa and around the world, expand the NBA's reach. You know, we have been very focused on building communities. Our players have been on the forefront, not just the last 2 years, in terms of, you know, being advocate and being interested in causes that were beyond basketball. So that doesn't stay only in the U.S. You know, a few weeks ago, the NBA Africa and the Basketball Africa League announced our social justice initiative that is going to be focused on really gender equality, fighting gender-based violence in Africa, and promoting girls' education to make sure that young girls have the same opportunities to achieve their dreams as boys. And also another pillar of our social justice initiative is economic inclusion. We are going to promote partnerships with small SMEs from African countries where we do business, where we work to grow our sport, and also beyond. So I think this is nothing new, and we are building on the foundation that started in the U.S., and as we remain part of the NBA family, the Basketball Africa League is part of the NBA families of leagues, like the G League, the WNBA, and 2K. The same values that we have, our players will be free to be involved in causes that is of interest and also in causes that would advance the community development.
That's Basketball Africa League President Amadou Gallo Fall speaking with the Voice of America in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Sporting greeting. My name is Coco Victor Anthony. I'm a player of River Supers. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thanks.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hello, sports fans. This is Paul Tergat, marathon champion from Kenya. You are listening to the Sony Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
In African athletics, world marathon champion Ruth Chepngetich of Kenya, fresh off a world record performance at the half marathon distance, might run another half marathon before she makes her Olympic debut in Japan. 3 days ago in Istanbul, Turkey, Ruth set a new women's half marathon record, clocking 1 hour, 4 minutes, and 2 seconds. Her Italian manager, Federico Rosa, says Chepngetich might compete in another half marathon before the Tokyo Games. Ruth Chepngetich has been named to Kenya's Olympic marathon team. The Women's Olympic Marathon is scheduled for August 7th in Sapporo, Japan. Olympic organizers decided to move the men's and women's marathons to the northern city of Sapporo to avoid the worst of Tokyo's summer heat. Elsewhere in African athletics, it's been a breakthrough year for Ghanaian sprinter Benjamin Azamati. On March 26th, competing in the southwestern U.S. city of Austin, Texas, Benjamin clocked 9.97 seconds for 100 meters. That's a new Ghana national record, and it also qualified Azamati for the Tokyo Olympics. And in terms of running on that Austin track 12 days ago, well, Benjamin Azamati is familiar with Texas. He's a sophomore or second-year student at West Texas A&M University. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, Yawafusu Larbi in Accra tells us more about Tokyo Olympics-bound Benjamin Azamati.
Brock comes right up out of the blocks. Next to him, Benjamin Azamati from West Texas A&M running away with this heat from Ghana. It's Azamati winning the heat easily. 9.99, but you got to wait for the wind. We've had some pretty big winds. It's legal. 9.97 with a 1.5 meter per second wind.
When Benjamin Azamati breezed his way past other athletes and over the finish line, he knew he had produced a masterclass. The smile on his face, his ecstatic celebration and general demeanor showed it all. He had just smashed a long-standing Ghanaian 100-meter national record, formerly held by sprinter Leo Miles Mills, a record he set in 1999. It has taken 22 years to beat the national record, and it took a 23-year-old to do it. Azamati grew up in the plains of Achimoda in eastern Ghana and developed a love for the tracks when he enrolled in the Presbyterian Boys Secondary School in Legon, in the capital, Accra. There, he honed his skills before he moved to the University of Ghana, where he obtained a Bachelor of Science degree in Marine Science. At the University of Ghana, Azamati smashed every 100-meter sprint record. He also currently holds the record at the Africa University Games as the fastest sprinter. Azamati is going into the rest of his meets this year with an Olympic ticket in his hand. And he says it is a dream come true for him.
Every athlete wished to run in the Olympic Games. I mean, and then that has been the target for me this season. And that is what I've actually been working towards. So going into the Texas Relays and then to run such a time to qualify for the Olympics, I mean, the target has been achieved, but it's up to me to, you know, go there and then also to perform very well. So the target for this season has actually been achieved.
As Amati says, making the time and breaking the record is huge for him. He bettered his personal best in the race, smashed a long-standing record in the process. His achievements have been well-received back in Accra.
I think it came as a surprise to everyone because going into the race, I had a personal best of 10.32. And then moving from 10.32 to a 9.97 is like a shock to everyone. So I think everybody was surprised, and at the same time, they were, you know, proud of me. So I had a lot of messages, which I'm not even done replying. But I think everybody was happy, and I liked their reaction to it. And not as if they doubted I could, you know, run that time or anything. It's like it's too early for them. And then, you know, that is why they are surprised. And then I'm happy with their reaction because it shows how much, you know, they love whatever that I'm doing. So I'm happy, and then I'm glad they have such love for whatever that I'm doing.
There has been a history of Ghanaian sprinters doing well at meets and making excellent qualifying times, but failing to replicate that form at international tournaments. It has accounted for the country's failure to win medals in sprints at the Olympics and other international meets. Azamati hopes he can break that jinx this year.
I think with that, I should say maybe it depends on the individual and whatever that they go through before the races and everything. And then, you know, it's a race and anything at all can happen. I can use myself as an example, the times that I ran. So you wouldn't know what will happen. You can, you know, cramp up or anything due to, you know, warming up well and all that. So I think those are the factors that go into it. So it's not about the person not wanting to perform, but there are certain instances that wouldn't let the person perform. Like, you know, there could be psychological matters and all that. So I think those are the points that maybe we should think about and then consider. But me personally, you know, I just pray I'm healthy and then I'll be able to go in there and then run good.
The 23-year-old is Ghana's undisputed sprint star, and it will take some running to beat his current 9.97 national record. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Yao Fusulabi in Accra.
My name is Benjamin Azumati, a member of the quartet team that won gold for Ghana in the African Games that happened in Morocco, Rabat. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
This is the Voice of America. Washington, D.C.
The Voice of America's global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
Thanks, Steve. That's my VOA colleague, Steve Miller. More European club football news. Chelsea will face FC Porto later Wednesday evening in a first leg UEFA Champions League quarterfinal match. Chelsea's manager says two players on his team have buried the hatchet after a bust up in training. VOA's Gwen Uten tells us more. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Last Sunday, tensions ran high during a training session between Chelsea's German defender Antonio Rudiger and Spanish goalkeeper Kepa Arrizabalaga. Things got heated when Rudiger made a late challenge on Kepa during a small-sided game. Their disagreement sparked an argument that got physical, and the two men had to be separated. Rudiger was taken off the field, but apologized to Kepa on his own accord a few minutes later. On Tuesday, Chelsea manager Thomas Tuchel described the incident as serious, but he told reporters the air has been cleared and neither player will face punishment.
We calmed the situation down immediately, but I was very, I don't want to play it down now artificial. These are things we don't want to accept and things that are normally unusual, but they can happen in little games after in little groups and they are all competitors and want to win training matches. So things got a little too heated up and the reaction was not okay. But the reaction to it, how the guys handled the situation, especially Tony and especially Kepa, was amazing and showed like how much respect they have in the end for each other, because they sorted it out directly. They cleared the air immediately, and this was the most important. So there was nothing left one day after.
The dust-up followed Chelsea's 5-2 loss to West Brom in the Premier League, a defeat that snapped their 14-game winning streak and ended Tuchel's unbeaten record as Chelsea's manager.
We got a big slap in the face, like I said, and if it is most necessary to remind us how tough it is to have clean sheets to keep on winning, okay, we take it like this. But, you know, it's normal that people create stories around it, and it's absolutely normal that Porto will play their role as an underdog. We come from Premier League. They play in the Portuguese League, obviously. They are a strong team. They are a very strong team in Champions League. How we will celebrate, how should we celebrate it? We respect any team. We come from a competition where you can obviously lose. We are able to lose against the 19th in the fixture 5-2. So we are the ones who know how humble you approach. We approach every game and we prepare 100% professional and humble and down to earth every match.
But Tuchel insists his side is not panicked heading into their Champions League quarterfinal tie against FC Porto.
We play quarterfinal in Champions League. Once you wish for an opponent, okay, you get lost. You will lose yourself in some crazy mind games. So this is it. We have the feeling, we have the strong feeling that we are strong enough to overcome Porto. I have the feeling that it will be a tough match, because I expect nothing else than the best Porto, a very experienced side in this competition. Champions for many, many years and in Portugal. So this shapes a certain mentality. And still, I just can repeat, we are confident enough that we are strong enough and we believe in ourselves to overcome this round. And we play clearly to make it to the semifinal.
Wednesday's first leg quarterfinal will take place in Sevilla due to COVID-19 restrictions. Chelsea will then host FC Porto in their second leg match next week. But Chelsea will first return to the Premier League to face Crystal Palace on Saturday. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Let's give a Sunny Side of Sports birthday salute to Buster Douglas, who pulled off one of the biggest upsets in boxing history in 1990 when he beat Mike Tyson in Tokyo to win the undisputed World Heavyweight Championship. Now, Buster would have a very short reign as the heavyweight champ, about 8 months. Later in 1990, Buster Douglas lost his title belts when he got knocked out by Evander Holyfield. Buster was born April 7th, 1960 in Columbus, Ohio, where the Ohio State University is located. Buster had his last prize fight in 1999 when he stopped fellow American Andre Crowder in the first round. Overall, Buster's professional record was 38 wins, 6 losses, 1 draw, and 1 no contest. But undoubtedly, his biggest victory was that 10th round knockout of Mike Tyson in Tokyo in 1990. Happy 61st birthday, Buster Douglas. And that wraps up the April 7th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.